Backstage with Robert Emery.
Hello and welcome to Backstage with me, Robert Emery. Today on episode number 13, I'm interviewing the fantastic actress and singer Jodie Prenger. Jodie's a really fascinating person because she was thrust into the limelight with the TV talent show I'd Do Anything. But unlike a lot of the talent show hopefuls, she's actually managed to carve a really successful career for herself. She's a lovely lady. She's currently working with the National Theatre, and a big thank you to the National Theatre for setting up this podcast. So here we are, Jodie Prenger. Hello, 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 and welcome.
Hello, thank you very much.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
I'm not sneezed, have I?
I just thought it would be a good idea to chat with you because your path to being successful in your career is a rather unusual path, and it's an interesting story, and you're an interesting person to discuss. And
I've never heard that before.
Well,
thank you very much.
But also how you've managed to carve a career out for yourself, and I can see, judging by some of the past things you've done, that it's a very intent thing that you've done over a considerable period of time to try and create a career. So yeah. I just thought, before we go there,
yeah,
can you tell me just a little bit about yourself, how you grew up, where you grew up, what you did as a kid?
Yeah, I grew up literally in the heart of a little known town called Blackpool. Some have been and never come back. But I grew up in the hub of entertainment. And my nan was friends with people like Danny LaRue. Oh. And they used to have all these big parties, and it was just the hub of entertainment. It was the summer seasons of Russ Abbott or Brian Connolly, and it was always kind of there was always singers or drag acts going on in every, you know, hotel and every
Russ,
bar.
Whatever happened to Russ Abbott?
Do you know what? This is no word of a lie. When we were doing Oliver in 1926, he came and did a stint as Fagin for 2 weeks.
Did he really?
And he was phenomenal.
Oh, bless.
He really was. And I think I saw him not that long ago. It was a BBC Comedy Week at Media City in Manchester. And he was there. And I saw him at the King and I press night.
Aha. So he's still knocking going around. Oh, bless him.
He looks really well, actually.
Oh, good.
Oh, Russ Abbott.
Sorry to disturb.
We digress. So, yeah, so I grew up in the hub, and I just, my mum and dad had hotels, and my nan and granddad had hotels. And I remember, I think the first visuals I have of any form of entertainment was, of course, 42nd Street was the first musical my nan took me to see. And then there was a drag act called Jackie Lester. Thank you very much. And my nan always used to ironically mime to songs such as the Shirley Bassey version of As Long As He Needs Me. Yeah. Couldn't sing a note in her head. Like, I couldn't sing at all. And none of our family are kind of creatives, as we say. But yeah, that's the thing that I remember visually and just being in awe of and just going, oh, I love it. So that's for me where I grew up.
And you're a tiny tot when you started getting an exposure to all this.
I was never a tiny tot. I was always a little chubby wubble with a terrible fringe and no teeth in the head. So it's always been tough for me. But yeah, that's where I kind of really remember. And I was, as a child, I was really shy, always hid behind my mum. And for me, you know, getting up and kind of singing and dancing was my way of expressing myself. And here today, it's made me that I don't shut up. So it's done me a favour in many ways.
But you were a shy child apart from when you were performing.
Well, you would be if you had a really cut, like, sharp cut fringe and no teeth.
Yes.
I mean, you just want to hide from everything, really.
I mean, I had
What was you like as a child?
Yeah, I had a bowl cut.
Did you?
Yeah, it's really, really.
But did you have all your teeth?
Do you know what? I can't remember.
You can't remember?
I guess so.
Do you never get those, like, old photos out and say, well,
no, I try and avoid it.
Get them out. They're brilliant.
I try. But there is something, you know, I was really shy as a kid. I used to, like, hide under my mother's skirt. Yeah, I mean,
did
I was petrified. But there's something about performing and being in front of an audience of, you know, anywhere from 200 to 25,000,
yeah,
which is fine for me.
Yeah.
Put me in a room with, you know, five people, and I'm the one who wants to merge into the wallpaper like a chameleon. It is.
Do you know what? And sometimes, you know, I'm still like that. There's nothing more than I'd love to be in my pyjamas sat at the side, you know, with a plate of chips, just watching everybody get on with it. But it is the being part of the industry. It does bring you out yourself.
Yeah.
And when you do get to perform, it makes you feel, I don't know, this sounds so Miss Will speech, and please stop me.
Here we go.
It just makes you feel at home. You know, and it's a bizarre thing.
That's the quote for you.
Yeah, it's my home. There's no place like home. But it does, it makes you feel that you are where you should be, really. Mm. So that's what I've always strived for. Mm. You don't strive for pushing your grand down the flight of stairs just to get to that part. And some people do, and it's whatever, you know, whatever fills the boots. But I don't think this industry is about that. Mm. I think this industry is so exciting when you get to work with creatives that inspire you and share a stage with people you're proud to share a stage with. That's and vice versa with TV. Being part of companies is always something that's very inspirational. Mm. I'm still in the Miss World speech. I'm going to start.
So in 2006, you were on a TV show called The Biggest Loser.
Yeah.
So what made you want to go on this?
Because I was 22 stone.
Yeah, but was it a monetary thing? You thought, oh, well, look at the golden pot at the end of the tunnel.
And to be honest, even when we did the Nancy show, I mean, don't tell Cameron this, but I would have done it for free.
Yeah.
You know, it's that thing of they are once in a lifetime opportunities. And if I had the money, I would go and pay for them over and over again, because they just, those things don't happen, you know. And I remember watching the American version of it and seeing all these people, and it just broke my heart. It really did. I think I was over 22 stone at that point. And I said, I just want that opportunity. I want to look, because I've been on every diet tablet going. I mean, people out there who've ever had a diet issue, they'll know the cabbage soup diet, the boiled egg diet. I've done them all. And I've bought every stretchy pen to go with them. And yeah, just saw it. And then they said at the end of that, do you want to apply to go on the UK version? And then I did. And then I'm so glad when we went on it, they did it very similar to the American version, I remember. And they put the girl on the boys' team, which was me, and then the guy in the girls' team. And so I trained like a man. Wow. So maybe that was the drag act in Blackpool that was coming out. I don't know.
And you won it.
And, I won it.
And I mean, I know that you dropped down to a weight which you thought wasn't too light for you. What was it?
Yeah, I felt a bit weird, actually.
Yeah, final weight was 61.
You still never feel a different person. Yeah. No matter, I mean, my weight now goes up and down like a bride's nighty, but you still feel the same person.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you feel any different.
But did it have any long-term effect on you, the programme? Did it, I don't know. In the regards of, I mean, was it your first little stint of having a television camera shoved in your paint?
Never did like they do nowadays in Celebrity Brother and try and whack out a single. Okay. In the jungle, never sang once,
okay.
Never alluded to, you know, I said I did it, but I never alluded to the fact that I wasn't catching a camera going, because I never wanted it for that.
Okay.
And I think, I do feel, and I don't know if you agree, it's a different entity nowadays where the minute people get that kind of flicker of fame, they use it to progress a singing career, progress...
And it's usually a flash in the pan thing.
I swear to God, on every animal I have ever owned, I swear in their lives, it never entered my mind to do that.
All right, fine. Just before that, I just wanted to ask you, because I found out in June of 1998, you appeared in two different shows each night in Blackpool.
Oh, I did.
And apparently you ran between the theatres.
I did. Judy Dench'd it. That was
amazing.
I remember I was doing a show at the Grand. God, it was Mac and Mabel, a bit amateur. And then I did another show at the Winter Gardens. Like, yeah, and I ran between the both. But there was a brilliant story that Cameron told me once, Cameron and Michael, about how Judy Dench had always wanted to appear on the Barricades. And she was doing a show, I don't know, somewhere down the road. And literally it coincided that she could go and run, die in the Barricades and go back.
No.
And she did.
That's an amazing story. I love that story.
I love that story. I love it dearly.
And then in 2008, you put yourself up for I'd Do Anything.
Mm.
And, you know, that must be the thing which changed your life around considerably.
It did. But I was actually, I had an interview not long ago, and I was thinking, I think they asked the question, where was your first ever audition? And I went, hold on a minute. The first ever audition, it wasn't for musical theatre. It was actually for the National Youth Theatre. And sadly, I used to go to, it was lovely, apart from a couple of girls. I used to go to an all-girls school. So I played every male part going. I have been Master of the House. I have been the Phantom. I've literally played every. I would love to see you as the Phantom. Coco and the Mikado. Oh, she was all there. She was there. And then it was just, at the time, there wasn't really that. There wasn't as many kind of drama schools. I think I actually applied for Sylvia's. I didn't get in.
Oh.
And
you got into the National Youth Theatre.
I got into the National Youth, and that really being part of that whole family made me go, oh, I just totally, utterly adored that. And that for me was changing in the way that I think it was then I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be part of that. And then going back home, it was always kind of like you couldn't really find a true path to get there. You know, I didn't want to go away from my home. I didn't want to leave my mum and dad. I didn't want to leave my animals. And that's honest to God truth. I tried so much to get into the West End and it just didn't work for me. And then it was actually on the radio that my mum heard an interview, like an advert, I should say, really, saying, if you want to go in for the Nancy show, apply. And that's what happened, really. And that was the pinnacle moment.
Yeah, that was the catalyst.
Was like, hiya. You know, here we are. And it was amazing. It's stressful, yes, but those shows are absolutely exceptional. And I hope Andrew does some more of them because they carve careers. And they're not flashing the pans. They're not, you've got to get a gimmick and then you're gone. They really are magnificent shows.
I mean, I've never been on one. I've never had anything to do with them, so I don't know how they run. But
would you do one if there was one for composers? Would you kind of go on and?
No, I wouldn't.
Why? Why? What's wrong with your music?
It's shit. Do you know what? I'm lucky enough that I got too much work. I turn it down, and I'm just.
Do you write stuff yourself?
I do.
What have you done? I don't know. Go and tell me about yourself.
I do. I do mostly work in continental Europe. I do. They pay better over there.
Oh, do they really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So I wrote a musical.
Who pays the best?
Well, Switzerland.
Okay, thank you. Well, they've got good banks there.
They do. Germany does very well as well. But you know what? They spend a lot of money on the arts. You know, in Germany, for instance, they, not to digress too much, but they. Each canton has its own essential budget for the arts,
really?
And they can choose how to spend it.
It's a nightmare.
So I love composing, but I don't think I'd ever do one of these shows just because I don't need it. You know, that opportunity should go to somebody else who is younger than me.
It doesn't matter on age. I mean, technically, I was 26 at the time and I was considered the old tart. But I think sometimes what they can do and say if your music, you know, you believe in that music. And I believe that I so wanted to be on the West End. I think going and worth taking the risk of exposing yourself is a risk worth taking. You know, if you want your music to be heard by the masses, you know, not necessarily just in Germany or not necessarily in Switzerland, it's something that when it's done right, like the BBC do it, it's something that can unearth something and just open doors in many ways that you'd never dream of. And that's what I'm saying. It's just, I mean, you look at Jessie was on the show, beautiful girl doing films, and it's amazing. I cried when she did The Rose. It was amazing. Yeah. And like Sam on Broadway and Rachel and Come From Away and Ashley's got her own. It's not just, you know, people.
But there's still a competition element to it. And
it weirdly didn't, I don't, I know.
It didn't feel like that? I mean, it must have felt like that to some extent.
I mean, I never thought I was going to win. Never in a month of Sundays, totally prepared my face.
Yeah.
So I didn't upset my mum and dad.
Yeah.
But then there was already when we did those shows, and obviously everyone goes to the BBC bar afterwards. And there's always about our table and story. And this is so silly. I thought, because in shows and in TV, they call it the rap party. Mm. But I used to think they said the rat party.
Oh, the rat.
I was just having to say it, the rat party. But yeah, there was already talks about, you know, if I didn't win it, there was already talks about other shows coming.
Yeah, sure.
So it just doesn't go. Like you say, I wouldn't do it, but how do you know that by not doing that? You'd have a show on Broadway next year.
Yeah, that's very true.
Thing we're not here for the longest time.
No, I know. Yeah, maybe you're right. But sadly, there isn't
enough time.
Well, there isn't enough time. And
who knows? Well, Caston are getting the BAFTA nomination now, so it's all going on.
So aside from your work on the stage, and we're going to talk in a minute about the National Theatre and why we're meeting today, but I see you also do stuff like, you know, you guest spot on BBC Radio 2 when Paul O'Grady and Elaine Page are...
I do. I haven't done it for the longest time because I've always been working, but I always go and read the addresses out for them and stuff. But Paul and Malcolm are just... Malcolm Prince are just two of the most adorable men.
Yeah.
Honestly, they're brilliant. So, yeah, so it's always lovely to be
That sort of thing, do you get asked to do it? Do you say to an agent, I'd quite like to do this? What's...
Yeah, I did. Yeah, a lot of the things I've never said to my agent, I'd quite like to do that. They've always kind of come round. And there's a great saying my nan always says, if it's meant for you, it will not pass you by. So I believe in that.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you do get asked to
do
something.
Are you quite a spiritual person?
I wouldn't say spiritual. I'm not going to go skip around with a, you know, ring of daisies around and waving a crystal up your nostril. But I don't believe everything's regimented.
Yeah, yeah. And you've clearly got this love of animals.
Yes. Why do you not? Because we'll end this conversation here.
No, I've got four cats, two rats and fish at home.
Oh,
so
really?
I love animals.
What's your cat's names? Come on, let me figure out what kind of person you are.
The oldest one is Merlin.
Thank
and Merlin
you.
Arrived in my house along with my wife. They came as a couple. And then there was little Miss Mulberry.
Thank
who
you.
Who was my present from my wife when I was away working for a while. And she got me Mulberry as a surprise.
Oh.
And then we moved to Cambridge, which is where we live now from London. And we went to a local rescue centre just to look around. It wasn't get any.
That's lethal.
And,
Absolutely lethal.
The thing is, if somebody says to me, you can't do it.
Oh, but you want to
something.
Do it more.
Oh, that's
there
it.
You go.
And I saw this beautiful pair of cats, sisters, and we inquired about them, not to take them home, but just say, you know, how long have they been there?
Yeah.
And the initial response was not just to tell this information, it was, sorry, you already have two cats, you can't have any more in your household.
Oh, no, why?
Because they said, you've got two cats already. And I said, well, I've got a 5-bedroom house.
Yeah.
At the time, it was just myself and my wife.
Yeah.
So that's 1 bedroom down. So I've got 4 bedrooms. So every cat can have their own bedroom. So that was it. I was like, no, damn it.
these are my cats.
So we took them home the next day. We got them. And Partridge and Penguin.
Thank you very much.
And that's...
Pee-pee, darling.
Yes, a lovely, lovely putty cat. So... what animals do you have now?
Oh gosh, how long have you got? We've got 4 rescue cows.
Cows.
As in moo cows. And then I can't believe I just said moo cows.
Do they have names?
They do. There is Molly, Timbo, Bullseye, and Arne. Actually, Arne was
And you live on a farm, I'm guessing.
I do have a farm, yeah. And there was these farmers, obviously, either side of us. And there was a mother cow with one horn, bless her, Molly. She's a bit of a diva, that's why I like her. And she came with Timbo. And unbeknown to us, she was pregnant. So I think at the time I was doing Shirley Valentine. And Simon was like, my fiancé was like, it's been born. And I was like, oh my God, what is it? It's a girl. And what colour hair is it? He's got red hair. I was like, oh, we're going to call it Anna. I mean, every animal's named after, obviously, a show or a diva. And then Annie turned into Arne. So I figured as wonderful as my fiancé is.
He's not good at
sexy. No, absolutely useless.
So what else do you have apart from cows?
We have over 40 chickens. Right. Most of them rescue ex-battery hens. Technically, I have 6 dogs in total.
6?
Yeah, my mum looks after the majority, and we've got the bigger dog at the farm, and then 2 rescue cats, a rescue parrot, a rescue tortoise.
How old's the tortoise?
They're about 5. There was an elderly couple couldn't have them, so they're living their best life.
I love tortoises.
They're just rocks.
I wanted to get one for
to be fair.
Really?
So, yeah, I was going to say another
great.
Word, but yeah, I held back on that.
And how do you, you know, touring is demanding, you know, as
very much so.
As an artist. So how do you manage to, this is down to your dear other half at home.
Who's, and a lovely handyman called Phil, who hasn't got many teeth, so you always got to make him soft sandwiches.
Okay.
I mean, don't give him Burt Bacon, he won't be back for a week.
Oh, bless
him. Fine. No, it's all right.
And why do you live on a farm? Why do you have all these animals?
Because it's my ultimate, I know we were talking about it before, it's genuinely my ultimate goal to have an animal sanctuary. And that's what I'd love to do. So obviously it's lovely to keep working because it keeps all my animals in feed. So please come watch a show.
But would you ever want to give up your career as an actress?
It was a bizarre thing. I think if there was something that was so kind of settled and there was, sadly, this is awful, isn't it? But if the money was going to be there, and obviously I need the money to kind of take care of the animals.
Yeah, of course.
There'd be a really kind of heavy question of, could I give it up to care and look after and rescue animals? I probably could. I think sometimes giving yourself out to the greater good is always a good thing. It's almost like being on stage, you know, when you get kind of people in comedy wanting the spotlight, wanting the gag, not allowing other people to have that moment on stage. Sometimes when you sit back and let them have it, something better always comes out of it, I find.
It's fascinating. Yeah. I never met an actress who
would give it up.
Who would give it up for?
Oh, it's
for
quite
animals.
Nice going home and being feral. funny enough, we went when we were just I've just finished a short stint with Anna, and we were at the Hippodrome for 3 weeks
in Birmingham.
In Birmingham,
yeah.
And myself and they were doing this presentation, the Hippodrome of a Brick, and they said, "Would you and Jenny Gaynor, another amazing actress?" Would you go to the dog's home and present? I was like, yeah, fine. So I can't even watch Free Willy. That's just, I'm just putting it out there. So they said, we'd like to play a video for you. I was like, oh, we'll be fine. So I sat there watching this video and I thought, I'm going. I can feel it. And you know, when you can feel your heart. And then I turned around and everybody else was just stone cold faced, enjoying the video, of course. And me and Jenny Gaynor were like, I just can't watch it, the dogs. Oh, gosh. Mascara down my face.
Oh, bless.
But it was lovely, yeah. So if anyone's in Birmingham, go to Birmingham's Dog's Home. It's lovely.
It's my hometown.
Is it really? Ooh. Whereabouts in Birmingham are you from?
Well, I'm not really from Birmingham. I just say that to make me sound a bit nicer. I'm from a little village close to Warsaw, which is not very nice, but...
There's some lovely parts around there.
There are some lovely parts around there. Yes.
Where's your accent gone?
It went. Yes.
She's put it in the bin outside.
No comment. How do you cope with touring?
I enjoy it, I think.
Because I've never done it.
You never toured?
Well, I've done touring in terms of, you know, I've been to Australia for a day.
Yeah.
For a gig. And so I do that sort of touring where I might go to, you know, Vienna for a couple of days and then off to... But I've never done a sort of a... I've not done a sort of a schlepping around the UK sort of tour.
Yeah, that's not too bad when you do that. I mean, for me, that side of it is mainly when it comes into filming and stuff. Mm. But when you tour, you kind of settle down for a week. I mean, don't get me wrong, I did my living in London. I lived in the heart of it all. Especially, you know, when you do the Oliver and the One Man Two Governors. I always call it One Man Two Knickers, and I'm glad I didn't say that. I just did.
You just
anyway,
said it.
Just said it.
And you lived in the slap bang in the centre of town when you did it.
Yeah, I used to live on the South Bank, which was amazing. Oh, the fireworks.
Oh, lovely.
Loved it. It was brilliant. But I don't know, for me, for touring, it's easier because I can get home to see my mum. It's easier because I get home to see my family. And my fella's business is all kind of in the north. And I tour a lot, and there's so much going on in Manchester regarding filming. It's like we just did all that years and years there, the new Russell T Davies series. So there's a lot going on in the north. And of course, Channel 4's going to Leeds. And so for me and for touring, it kind of works for me. When necessarily when I'm in town, it is more of a schlep to get home.
Okay, that's interesting.
Kind of see the majority of the people I love. A couple of the ones that I can't really be bothered.
That's interesting, because I just always assumed it was the other way around. I just always assumed...
Not for me. Really. I couldn't have my animals in London. I couldn't really fit my 40 chickens in my two-bedroom flat.
But if... You could try.
I could try, but if
an opportunity came, which I'm sure it will do, for another contract in town...
Of course I would. Of course, yeah. You'd go... It's like, you know, we talked about there are these opportunities that come up, these once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, like the Tell Me on the Sunday, like the Shirley Valentine, like the Calamity Jane, all these shows that are just genuinely, Abigail's Party, Beverly, love playing her, and Annie, these shows that you want to go, yeah, I'm going to tick that off, tick it off, because I want to do them. And no matter where you go, you make
you would just
happen.
Do it. And yeah. What about this show? So can you tell us about The National? And, because, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? Working for the National Theatre.
I know, I'm surprised they've had me back. Yeah, because it was brilliant. The first time round, obviously, because they went off to Broadway, James Corden and his troupe, and then we came on and played at the Haymarket, One Man, Two Governors. Yeah. And I just loved it. It was nice to kind of, again, be part of the National Youth Theatre, and I felt it was lovely. Kind of through the kind of the journey that you I hate that word journey. I said it. It's like moo cow. I'm just disgusted with myself. But you come through and you work with them, and that was a brilliant collaboration on One Man, Two Governors. Again with a bit of music in, which was great. And then to come kind of again round with Taste of Honey, which is a play that I knew really well and loved.
But it's a play and it's got a band. It's got an on-stage band.
There is, I mean, in the actual original kind of production itself, there was a musical element in it. But this is kind of being expanded and kind of, it's almost like saying, we described it as, it's set in the 50s, 1958 to be exact. But like nowadays is shows like the British Bake Off, which kind of have the niche 1950s, but it's obviously not 1950s. Yeah. It has got that element of it. It's not kind of adhered to the era.
Set in Salford. Which is where you open, I think.
Yes, at the Lowry. And so it's kind of, it's of the era, but it's of the now. That should be on the posters.
Of the era, but of the now.
Gosh.
But are you singing in it, though?
Yeah, I'll be singing in it, yeah.
A lot?
It's quite, that's still to be discussed. We're just going through with Ben now with some... kind of
who's Ben
the musical director, and the kind of it's a very collaborative piece, so we've already workshopped some music. There was music in it with Amy Winehouse, there was music with Nina Simone, kind of Peggy Lee, so you can kind of grasp what kind of rhythm and they're going for. Really, yeah, Amy Winehouse is a very big influence in this, I have to say.
Really?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, have you ever written any Amy Winehouse like? Have you not?
I have.
You've never lived.
Not yet.
You've never lived. What kind of music do you write?
Never pays.
See, it shouldn't be like that. Don't.
No, that's not true.
Do, because you
that's
love doing
not
it.
True. I, you know.
It is true. I can tell by your face because you can't stop nodding.
No, I've got a theory. A very old. Well, he's not old. He'd kill me for saying that.
He's 28.
Mike, do you know Mike Dixon?
Dixon? I adore that man.
So, for those of you who are listening who don't know Mike is... Mike is a musical supervisor.
Legend.
He's a musical director.
Superstar.
Yeah. He's a very nice man. And Mike has supported me, you know, many, many years.
Yeah.
And one of the first things he ever said to me when I was about knee-high to a grasshopper, he said... Robert, the thing I've got to tell you, one of the best bits of advice I can give to you, which was given to me, is whatever you're working on, you've got to make that your favourite piece of music
very
at the time.
True, yeah,
and if
true.
You can find a way to summon your internal being to make that the thing that you really love working on and that you really love doing what you're doing, then you know, you'll be quizzing and it'll work. And so the only reason why I say I do what I, it pays well... If it's something that I don't like, you know, I won't do it.
Yeah.
But I don't mind. I really don't want to be pigeonholed, and I guess you don't with the fact of
all.
You know, you're working now in a play in you know, the National. I know there's singing in it, but you know, it's definitely not a Calamity Jane.
I do agree. I think there's like it's going back to that phrase that my nan says, if it's meant for you, it won't pass you by. I don't think. If I hadn't got the taste all those years ago for and always had a love of plays, music was something that was brought up on. But then if I hadn't had done, I remember doing Tell Me a Sunday, one woman show, I don't think I would have had the confidence to then go on and do Shirley Valentine, another one woman show. And then I think if I didn't do Shirley Valentine, I wouldn't have done Abigail's Party.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, it's that pigeonhole which over here in the UK is particularly stronger than over in the US. Whereas if you are musical theatre, you are kind of TV. Yeah. Whereas musical theatre here is like, you can't do TV.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, it's good to kind of not pigeonhole yourself. But I agree with you, is to love and adore everything you do.
Mm.
Do it because you love it.
Yeah.
Not because of the pay packet.
No, no.
And any producers listen to this, take no notice.
You know, I wrote a musical about the last witch of Europe.
I think it's in Switzerland. Then.
Well, it's set in Switzerland, and they built a theatre for it.
She didn't go get euthanized. She just bought a one-way ticket and sing.
Well, it's based upon a true story with this lady called Anna Goldie, who in 17 something or other lived in Switzerland, and she was the last person to be killed, and. I mean, it's a long story, but essentially she was a housemaid.
Yeah.
The mayor of the town, for the mayor of the town. The mayor of the town in those days was the sort of king of that area.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant because he raped her. He found out. She ran
There's
away.
There's no tap shoes in this. I've got a feeling about that, isn't
she there? Ran away.
Yeah.
He chased after her and essentially tried her for witchcraft because he wanted to get rid of her. Because he didn't want anybody knowing what had happened. And so he was the judge, jury and executioner because he turned around and said, I found you guilty. There's no evidence. You guilty.
Well, okay, and they said... A certain president will not talk about right
no,
now.
Don't even go there. I mean, it's crazy. But and he said, you've got two choices. We can either put you in the water and you'll either... you'll either sink, in which case it'll prove that you're not a witch.
Yeah.
But you'll be dead.
Kind of awkward, isn't it?
Or we can do it the quick way and we'll behead you.
There was no third choice in this at all.
So she opted for beheading. So she beheaded.
Awful.
So I created.
There's no win-win for that, is there?
There isn't. There isn't. Definitely no tap. But, you know, that's an example of a story which
not
I went...
Not a sequin well, this is, inside on no, that one, is no, there? Not a sequin inside.
No jazz hands. Sorry.
No jazz hands. Put them down.
But I saw that story and I thought, this is amazing. So I wrote a really big symphonic orchestral score for 65 musicians. And then, you know, I'm working on another thing at the moment, which has got a 5-piece band on it, which is more modern and a bit more sort of Greatest Showman type of Dear Evan Hansen type of sound, you know. So I just don't want to be pigeonholed. I want to do what I want to do, how I want to do it. And
funny enough, we were talking about this the other day, saying when you work in this industry, you are a creative entity, shall we say. So when you walk into a room, you come with an open mind, open heart, and let's get the job done.
Yeah.
So when you work like that, you kind of adhere to other people, or you kind of bounce off other people. That's what this industry is about. So I think the less you pigeonholed, no matter what kind of, I don't know, what kind of corner of this entertainment industry you work in, I think you are allowing yourself to create greater things. Because you're not saying, oh, just get Joe Bloggs because they do the best cat routine.
Exactly, yeah.
You don't know that, you know.
Help mould yourself into different...
Exactly.
But, you know, if there's any young... I was going to say young kids, that's a bit derogatory.
Young kids, isn't it? Oh, they...
If there's any youth of today listening...
Stop scratching your bum and pull it out and get out there and live your life.
If there's anybody listening who wants to work in this industry...
Yeah.
What's the one piece of advice that you would
be prepared to adapt, be prepared to work, but please enjoy it and don't moan. Oh God, it gets me when they moan. I mean, we're British, we all have a good moan, but that's the thing that really knocks me.
I've got 10...
Bitters. I call them bitters.
I've got 10 quick fire questions for you.
Go on.
So nice and quick answers, please.
Okay. What are you trying to say? I thought we were getting on there.
Well, number one... Number one.
You've got to read it. You can't bloody read it. And you've just bought your glasses. Come here, let me read it.
Educated in Birmingham. That's why, love. Number one. One person you've never worked with that you always wanted to.
There's quite a few. I mean, I'd love a little duet with Liza Minnelli, but...
There you are, that's fine. Number two.
Thank you.
If you weren't an actress, what would you be?
Well, a vet, this is obvious. But I just can't put animals down.
Oh.
I know.
Number three. If you could have one thing in the world right now, what would it be?
a tablet that makes everybody nice and just get on. That's it.
Sweet. Number four, what is the proudest moment of your career so far?
It's hard, really. I don't necessarily take pride in myself. I love it when I remember seeing my mum and dad's face when I won the Nancy show. That's proud for me. When I do my family proud. So yeah, probably that is the one.
Number five, what's the worst moment of your career so far?
The worst? Where do I start?
And I'll give you not a clue, but you know, when I asked Peter Polycarpou this question.
Oh my God, yeah. We did Les Mis together.
Yeah, and Polly's response was getting fired as the Phantom from Andrew Lloyd Webber directly.
I know.
So, I mean, that's a great one. I don't know if anybody can top that, but the worst moment of your career.
No one's fired me. Oh, well, give it time. I've got a tendency to fall. So
fall as in fall over.
Oh, yeah, full on flat. I don't know how I've got there. It's 1, 2, 3, down, face on floor. So I've just done it in Annie. I've done it in Les Mis. I've done it in Oliver. I've done it in every show I've done. So they're the worst moments because you don't know how you've got there. And the audience are like,
oh. And yeah. It's that horrible silent moment. Is she going to get up? And what do you do? Do you try and stay in character? Do you make a comedy out of it? What do you do?
I remember in Les Mis, I was just so proud because it was when I was part of the ensemble. Not when we did it with Peter Polycarpou. I love that man. In Dubai. I was part of the ensemble and I fell down. And I actually got up and was like, don't worry, I'm all right. I don't know why I went so ridiculously northern. It was like I was walking down with pies in my hand. Don't worry.
In a performance?
Yeah. Everything's a performance.
But you just to pause the quick fire questions, which are not turning out to be very quick. You were in Les Mis after you won the Nancy
show.
Yeah,
so I went to do 4 weeks in the ensemble. So just to kind of learn the kind of the regimentation of a show and how it works.
Did it help?
Yeah, it did. And it was one of those things you think you're going to go in and you think everyone's going to be kind of that West End bitchiness.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was a really lovely family.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I mean, they're still out there. Don't get me wrong. I'll tell you the names after. And it's a shame. I always think it's a shame like that because this is the industry, especially, again, the thing that's just been in the news of late is a Cheer Up Charlie. But yeah, the West End, for me, the first family was Les Mis, and I cherish that.
Have you had issues with your career because of how
you became
a household name and therefore you have other actors
who are jealous
of that?
And then you go, then I always go, well, yeah, you don't want to sit down and go, well, here's my repertoire. I did the National Youth and I went and did the BTEC and I went and did that. I don't have to do that. And I don't feel that I'm willing to roll my sleeves up and prove my worth and graft with everyone. But I just don't feel that when that bitterness kind of comes through and unearths itself, they're the people that you don't have to explain yourself to. It's their issues and their issues. And it doesn't eat me alive. Sadly, it eats them alive. And I just think...
I mean, the nice thing about you is that you've got quite a northern attitude, which is this family, take me as I am. You know, I'm here to do my job, work bloody hard.
We're all here to
play nice. And it's a very northern attitude. It's a lovely attitude. And I find it slightly bizarre that anybody can try and go against that. I mean, if you walk into a room going, I am the one who won this competition, you know, then that's a different matter. But, you know, that's so not
and
you.
And they need a slap when people do stuff like that. I do not agree with anything like that. But we just, funny enough, and it was only, and I think there's a new thing, whether this Cheer Up Charlie is part of that. When we had the big meet and greet, it was so lovely to hear that the National did a speech going, we are all on the same, you know, playing field. Mm. If any bullying is noted, any form of bullying, it's to be made aware of. And I think that's extraordinary because, yes, it does happen in this industry.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's listening to this, if you do see it happen, or you see yourself doing this, or it's happening to somebody else, tell somebody.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing. And I just think, you know, this business is tough enough as it is, so just let's just get on.
Yeah, just have a nice time.
Why make it harder than it already is?
I couldn't agree more. Number six.
Yes.
Well, this is not relevant for you, but I've written a piece of music you wish you'd have written, but that's not relevant for you in the slightest.
No, I do actually. I do write. I do play by ear. I vaguely read music, but I do actually write a bit of music.
Did you?
Kind of quite spacey music and stuff like that. Not spacey. That's totally wrong. word, but kind of relaxing music.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you listen to?
Everything. My Spotify is like Tourette's. So today it's Harry Connick Jr., tomorrow it'll be South Celtica.
Oh my God.
Maybe then going for kind of some classical and Leon
the
Bridges.
Shop.
Yeah.
Do you play an instrument?
I play the spoons.
So is there an instrument you wish you could play?
I can play the piano. But if there's a song, we're just working on a song, ain't got fun, and then I can run along with music, but if I hear it, I can give me 15 minutes, I can play it.
But is there an instrument that you wish you could play properly? Like an instrument you love the sound of and you're just like, oh.
I love the piano.
Is there an instrument you hate?
No, there's not actually an instrument I hate, no. It always gives me shivers. Funny enough, I've done Friday night, his music night with Mike Dixon and when the whole orchestra, and then we did another, I think, was that the one at Royal Albert Hall? But orchestras in themselves make the hair on my arms stand
amazing,
up. So I love any kind of, there's nothing that really jars
yeah.
in my ears.
Kazoo. There you are.
Bless you.
What's your most treasured possession?
I don't really have, not necessarily materialistic things, but I can't really say my iPhone, can I?
You just did.
I just did. No, and you need that for work.
I know.
Gosh, what would you do without them? My most treasured possession? My animals, really. It always goes back to them, doesn't it? Sorry, but it does.
And last one.
Yeah.
Oliver or Annie?
Girl or boy? Oliver, I've got to say Oliver because it was everything that really kind of, and you can't miss out Annie, she's an orphan. Don't be so horrible.
Sorry, it's a cruel one to finish on.
Cruel, horrible man.
Jodie, thank you very much for your time. Bless
thank
you.
You very
Bless
you. Much. Thank
you very
you.
Much. So for one last time, thank you very much for Jodie. She's a phenomenal lady, a force to be reckoned with. And also thanks to Lap56.com. You probably know by now, Lap56 are the luggage company that I use on a day-to-day basis with all my travel. I use their suit carrier, I use their backpack, I use their travel case. And no, it wasn't given to me. I bought it all. I think it's fantastic stuff. And I would highly recommend them to you. So that's Lap56.com. But for now, from me, it's ciao for now.